Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jayhawk Talk Podcast, episode 39. We are here to recap the battle for Atlantis. Talk a little bit about the offensive philosophy from our time down in Bahamas and going forward, some expectations and some football stuff. But first, Andrew, how you doing, man?
It's a rough weekend, Kevin.
Yeah.
Quite rough. You know, we had our little Thanksgiving break.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone enjoyed themselves, had some good turkey, had some good food, but didn't really have a good sports outing. What do you think?
Nah, I mean, if you're a Chiefs fan, too, you went pretty much 0 for the football game, the Chiefs game. KU only lost 1 of 3, but it feels like they lost 3 of 3. It was pretty brutal, man. But, you know, the good news is we got a nice long break here over this next week. Got plenty of time to get the boys back in the gym, get refocused, got a lot of game tape to look at. We're going to fix some things. I feel okay going forward, but we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about, the KU football season, a little recap, and we're going to do that towards the end. So if you're one of the basketball-only fans, first of all, you need to just get on board with the KU football team because they are making strides. Right, Andrew?
Right, Kevin.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
we have
so much football to look forward to in 2014. So much to look forward to.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit. We're gonna end it on a rosy note. We're going to try to anyway. But first, Andrew, let's talk about our friends at Johnny's Taverns. They have, of course, been a sponsor here at Jayhawk Talk for this season. We're very happy about that. Also happy that they are giving away a $30 gift card every episode. So we've been doing that. And first, Andrew, the first KU watch party for the Jayhawk Talk podcast is coming up December 10th. The Florida game, we're going to be watching the game at the Johnny's location at the P&L, the Power and Light location. They got a big section reserved for us. We love to meet as many of you guys as you want to come out. Bring your friends, bring your family, tell your friends. It should be a good time. We're going to hopefully watch a much better showing than we saw this weekend. So,
and also, Kevin will do a karaoke version of Blackstreet's No Diggity. If you show up,
there's probably like a 65% chance of that. Like, if
no,
there's
no, no.
karaoke,
there is a 100% chance of that occurring.
Right.
Even if there's no microphone or no PA system or any music,
no.
Chances are likely that Kevin will end up doing that. So come for the basketball game, stay for the Kevin entertainment.
There you go. Well, let's talk about this battle for Atlantis. Unfortunately, you know, the real bummer in this whole thing is that we don't get to keep Atlantis. I mean, that was the one thing that I think that you could tell a lot of KU fans were bummed on Twitter afterwards. It wasn't necessarily the loss or the way we played or that we couldn't score, that we couldn't defend, we couldn't rebound. It was that we lost Atlantis, man. We're going to let Villanova take Atlantis? That's a bummer.
They must have had their bill was to get it shipped back home, like, because I can't imagine Southwest, you know, flies that bag home for free.
Right.
That's got to be pretty expensive. But otherwise, it was a disappointing tournament. You know, we did go 2-1, but I don't think anyone walked away from that tournament feeling good. I mean, what's your opinion just before we dive into the nuts and bolts? Like, how are you feeling after the UTEP game?
Yeah, you don't feel good being the third place team in this tournament. We got third, though. That's good, right? We got third, the consolation team. I don't feel great. It was not what I expected to see, honestly. You know, we were playing really well. At the beginning of the season, maybe it was a little bit smoke and mirrors. We made some shots and certainly defended a lot better than we did down there. But I don't know. It was not the same team we saw the first 5 or 6 games of the season, including the exhibition games. And that's bound to happen with a young team. And, you know, they're playing in a freaking ballroom with bowling alley lighting, and I don't know. It's hard to really take, you know, like a whole bunch away from that, but certainly there was a lot to build from and a lot to talk about on those games. What about you?
I think this is generally going according to plan, as everyone said at the beginning of the year. And everybody at the beginning of the year said, this is a young team. There's going to be some hiccups. They're going to have to learn how to play against some weird things that they haven't seen before. And I think this is just going according to the plan. The thing that's different is we got off to such a hot start.
Right.
You know, I think if we had the same record as we did now, but we beat Villanova and we lost to Duke, people would be feeling a lot better.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But just because of how things worked out and where the losses came from, people seem to have a different opinion on it. But really, this is a young team. This is the first time this team had to deal with, you know, the amount of pressure that Villanova put on them, especially in a weird environment
right
down there in the Bahamas, to have to deal with this like immense pressure, you know, the traps that they were putting on the full court press, and then to have to deal with these junk defenses that UTEP was giving us, to have to deal with that as freshmen and deal with that for the first time live in a game. It's not going to go like a four-year starter team like last year is going to go. These were expected to be hiccups, and they certainly were. So I still think it's going according to plan, you know, as we said at the beginning of the year, with these hiccups. It's just we were maybe hoping that we'd roll over everybody, because we had been up to
the point. Expectations were set pretty high after the Duke game especially, and then, I don't know, I'm with you. And I think most KU fans will get on board with what you're saying too, in that, you know, it's a young team. I think everyone gets that. Everyone gets that there was going to be hiccups. But after the Duke game, everyone got a little, maybe just a tiny bit too riled up. And that's fair, though, because I think you and I did a little bit too. I guess let's get into the games. We're not going to spend, you know, a long time on each game, but we want to touch on the three games at least a little bit, just to talk about some storylines we took away from them. So let's start with the Wake Forest game. KU won 87-78. The story of the game to me was that KU built a 14-point halftime lead in what Bill Self said recently was the only good half of the entire week, that first half against Wake. And then we let Wake Forest cut it to 4 with 2 minutes left in the game before we eventually pulled away late. So it seemed to me like, man, that was a little scary. I didn't see that coming. It was a little foreshadowing of the next 2 days that no one really maybe expected. What about you? Were there any other takeaways from that game? At least just did that kind of surprise you a little bit?
Certainly surprised me. I mean, the second half was pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the box score, we gave up 26 points in the first half, and we gave up double that in the second half. We gave up 52 in the second half. So, I mean, just in terms of, you know, it's the same teams playing on the same day, you know, with only a halftime in between. You know, it's still 20 minutes, and one half you're giving up 26, one half you're giving up 52. Something happened.
Yeah.
Whether it was they figured something out, we missed on some things. But it was a bad half. Like, KU should never give up 52 points in a half. You know, we scored 47, but, you know, it's just, It made it rough for the whole weekend. I think that was the starting point. The start of the fall for the whole weekend.
Yeah, and you know, Wiggins played well. This was the one game where everyone was like, yeah, you know, he actually played okay. He scored 17 points, only took 7 shots to get 17 points, only played 25 minutes. There was a period in that game where Self rested basically the entire starting lineup for, I don't even think it was rested. It almost seemed like he benched the entire starting lineup for the second half. You know, the silver lining on that was that we were going to play 3 games in 3 days, and the starters were going to come out and, you know, assert themselves after being benched in the next game, this Villanova game. So that's kind of what everyone expected. It didn't really happen. Unfortunately, KU falls 63-59 in the Nova game.
Oh yeah. But just real quick to go back to the
Wake
Forest, Wiggins took 13 shots that day.
Oh, did he?
Scored 17, which just kind of goes to an overall theme of the weekend, is that Wiggins did not have a good field goal percentage game in any of the games. He just didn't shoot the ball well. and something we'll talk about later, just generally, didn't finish at the hole. And I don't think anyone really particularly finished at the hole very well.
No.
There was a lot of shots being missed from 1 feet, 2 feet, 3 feet that normally go in. The exception to that is Embiid, who made his close shots. But otherwise, let's talk briefly about the second half with the guys, the starters sitting. I think that the commentators, which aren't your traditional commentators, Seth Davis and some other guy, made it seem like it was a panic move for Kansas to play all the starters. But I guarantee you that all of the coaches who are watching that game who have to play Kansas weren't thinking, oh, this is a bad Kansas team. They were thinking, well, their bench players are playing better than their starters. This is something to worry about. Like, this is an incredibly deep team. They were more scared of Kansas after that than they were, you know, feeling good about their chances. So I think that's a positive thing. I don't think that you should be tricked into thinking, you know, what the commentators were making you think, because those guys played very well out there. And this is the second string. There were no starters out there for that, you know, significant portion of the game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. And like we said, it was also a nice silver lining that they were going to have some rest. But are you ready for the Villanova game now? Can I talk about the Villanova game? Is this a good time?
Nope.
Okay.
Let's go back to
skip. You want to skip that? You want to go talk about the introduction again? We talk about Johnny's.
You go? Yeah, let's go. December 10th. You go so fast. You don't let me get in here. December 10th. Sorry. Johnny's. Florida game. 6 p.m. Kevin's going to sing Blackstreet.
I'll be singing Blackstreet. Come on out. All right.
Now let's talk about Villanova.
All right. So, you know, KU actually jumped out to an early lead, 11-2 right out of the gate. And then so people were like, oh, okay, this is all right. You know, this is better than yesterday's game. The starters are asserting themselves a little better. And then next thing you know, Villanova scores 27 in the next 35 points. It did not end well in the second part of the first half. KU was actually out-rebounded 28-15 in the first half. That just does not happen very often against KU. Just outmanned, just manhandled, everything, any word you want to use, out-toughed, you know, whatever. It all happened in the first half. It was an ugly game, and I don't think anyone was feeling great about the second half, but, you know, they played as bad as they could for a long stretch there. I think a lot of people thought we'd come out and be a different team in the second half, and that did not really happen, Andrew.
That's right. Our boy, friend of the podcast, CJ Moore on Twitter, tweeted out this little nugget. KU scored 0.83 points per game against Villanova. The only time in the last five seasons KU
You mean points per possession? Sorry.
Yes.
You said points per game.
Oh, points per possession. The there only time in the last five seasons KU has been worse that Topeka YMCA made headlines. And of course, he's referring to the TCU game last year. Which basically means historically bad on offense.
Yeah.
I mean, and it kind of felt that way. Not because, well, one, shots weren't going down, and two, we had no answer for their press. Was there one time that you saw that we beat it and got an easy basket?
No.
Was there anything positive we did against that defense?
Not really. That's what was so frustrating, was that we just, you know, we have all this depth you mentioned. We had 10 players deep, and no one could answer. I mean, there was no one that was willing to just be the go-to guy in this game. You know, Mason was able to drive a little bit, and you know, he had 12 points, but he shot the ball 11 times and had zero assists, so he wasn't the go-to guy. Seldon was terrible. Tharp was terrible. We only had 9 assists on the entire game. I mean, just stuff like that. Just every stat you look at was brutal on that game, and it showed not only in the stats and the box score, but just in the game. It just never felt like at any point KU was willing to step up and be the tougher team. And that's what drove Self bananas, because that's, you know, that's what he prides himself on, prides his teams on, is that toughness. And, you know, finally at the under 8 TV timeout, Villanova led 57-46, and KU went on a little run there. Went actually on a 13-1 run. Ended up, you know, Mason on that and one play takes the lead with 34 seconds left. Started to feel like KU has no business winning this game, but they might actually do it. I don't know. Is that kind of the way you felt too?
Absolutely. I mean, they still had to have their miracle white guy three to win the game, which seems to always happen.
Right.
They should have won that game outright, but of course it's a KU loss. It's got to be miracle white guy three. A guy who had not made a shot the whole game, but somehow makes this one.
Yeah, something called Arkadian Kono. Arkadian Kono. I don't know. That was his name. He makes the three. They go out, blah, blah, blah. Actually, that guy ended up making several shots late against Iowa, too, to win that game. So he didn't just leave it to us. He also buried Iowa. But anyway, it was a rough game, man. It was not pretty. I don't think anyone felt particularly rosy after that game from any capacity, especially just not only just the team, but there was just no one that really stood out in that game. Wiggins only had eight, Wiggins shot eight times. Ellis shot eight times. And that's it. I mean, you want those, your two best scorers to shoot a little more. Anyway, it was frustrating. And we led to that. I don't know. Any other thoughts in that game before we move on?
Just, we got to get better breaking that press. I mean, that's something to look forward going forward when you're watching a game. See what the defense does against us and see how we react. Because the kind of blueprint out right now is something that's very effective is to run that little either full court trap or half court trap, because we had no answer for it.
We ought to be so good against that too. That's the frustrating thing. We should be so good against that. I mean, right? I mean, do you agree?
Like, just, you know, we should, we're fast. We're a fast break team, and we get a lot of points in transition. So we should be and a good ball handling team. You know, if you think about it, for a lot of the time, Nadir, Frank Mason, and Andrew Wiggins are all three guys who can be elite ball handlers or should be able to be, and nothing.
And
nothing
Seldon came. Too. I mean, Seldon, that whole team, and Perry Ellis is no bum with the ball. They just, the whole team should be a pretty good breaker of the press, and it just did not happen. So I think a lot of people were a little down on KU going into the UTEP game. And I think the team might have been a little bit too. I think they were a little bummed about not playing the championship game, probably a little bummed that they came down to Paradise and didn't get the job done on the business trip, hashtag business trip. But that's okay. I mean, they came out again real quick on UTEP, built a 15-2 lead, even though UTEP was doing the four corners stalling offense to keep the possessions low. And everyone was kind of like, this is garbage. This is junk. And it actually almost ended up working again, because KU just struggled to put a team away. You know, the frustrating part to me in this game, Andrew, was we were up by 14 points with 2 minutes and 21 seconds left. And we allow UTEP to score 13 points in like a minute. That cannot happen. I mean, that's what's so frustrating. Just like little things like that. Everyone just loses their mind in the late part of the game. And I don't know if they were just a little tired or just wanted to get out of there, but it's not a good showing. And again, not indicative of most self teams.
And it's not like we were any more tired than they were. I mean, we're a deeper team. We played fewer minutes, and you know, they were tired too. So I don't know. We just got to get that killer instinct back. That we got to, you know, the want to win. Didn't have that really in that game. Got to have that going forward. But, you know, Perry looked good in the second half. The first half, in the second half, he's kind of all we had. You know, Embiid, you know, if one positive we can take out of this whole tournament is that Embiid played very well. You know, in the UTEP game, he had 9 points. Seven blocks, and they all came in the second half. And Seldon had 14, six rebounds, but he also had six turnovers, which we really haven't seen a whole lot from him this season. So, I mean, some good things, some bad, but it's not this 95-point team we're used to seeing earlier in the year, it is a 67-point team or a 59-point team. We've got to find an offensive identity. But any overall thoughts from the entire tournament that the strikeout to you, things that we should be looking for going forward?
I think you mentioned the number one bright spot for me was the play of Embiid. He seemed like the best player to me, you know, per possession or per minutes on the entire team during this trip, at least. He shot 63.2% from the field in the three games. Played really well on defense, except for the fouls, which he's got to learn to not do, because he may end up being the most important player on this team. And that includes Perry Ellis. That includes Andrew Wiggins. I'm really impressed with what I've seen early on with Joel Embiid. He's going to be a big part of this team. Let's talk just a few stats from those three games that kind of jumped out. Three-point shooting was the worst part for me. We went 10 of 45 from three-point range, allowed the opposition to hit 12 more threes than we did on the three games, good for almost 40%. So that's a problem right now. What about you?
And I think that the three-point thing was a little overblown by Seth Davis on the call. He said, you know, and Stan Van Gundy were both saying, you know, they got to find an offensive identity in the sense that they need to get more three-point shooting. And I think that we're an okay three-point shooting team. It's just that the three-point shooters aren't taking the shots. The other guys are.
Yeah.
I think Wiggins is okay. Frank Mason's been taking a lot of threes and missing a lot of threes. Same with Nadir. You're not getting, you know, when Andrew White's in the game, he hasn't been taking those shots. Brandon Green's not getting any minutes. And Frank Camp's been missing. So I think that if you just kind of change how those three-pointers are divided up, you know, those numbers change a little bit. But that's just going to come with, you know, finding out who plays well together. It's going to be tough to put those pieces together right now. But another thing is free throws. Free throws were terrible in this game, especially Andrew Wiggins. He was 9 of 18, missed a lot of front end of 1-and-1s. We missed 30 free throws and 89 tries. I'm not saying the Villanova game goes differently if we make free throws, but certainly keeps us in it. What do you think?
No, I'm with you. We got to get better there. We actually shot it well coming into the tournament as a team from the free throw line, so I'm not terribly concerned about it. Again, I think you can chalk a little bit of this up to the Bahamas and sight lines and weird stadium and whatever. If it continues, then maybe it's a thing, but for the first 7 or 8 games, including the exhibition games, we actually shot it pretty well from the free throw line. Just did not down there. The one stat that drove me probably the most bonkers was the fact that we out-rebounded on a combined basis those three games, one more rebound than the other teams. We had 114 rebounds to 113 rebounds. And that's the one thing that, Tariq Black is not playing. Embiid said a lot. With one of those two guys out, both of those guys out, our rebounding is not very good right now. Perry's okay. You know, he gets his fair share of boards, but we got to get our guards to rebound better. We got to get our big men to play and not be on the bench. That was one thing that really jumped out to me. Any other stats?
We had more turnovers than assists. You know, we had 40 turnovers to 35 assists. You know, not, and then a lot of that came from the Villanova game. But additionally, Embiid was probably the best player minute by minute. You know, shooting at 63.2% and playing, you know, very efficiently on both ends of the floor, except for his foul trouble. But in just to go back to, like I said before, our three-point shooters, Andrew White, Connor Frankamp, and Brandon Green, 0-for-3 from three.
No, 0-for-3. I think it was like 0-for-8.
Over from three. Not, first of all, not taking a whole lot over the course of three games and not making any.
Yeah. I think, I can't remember what it was, but I think Andrew White shot 6 and made 0. And the other two guys combined for 2. I don't know, something like that. But, yeah, we got to get those guys on the floor a little bit, I think. If for any other reason, like you said, we got to find a way to stretch the defense out a little bit. Because right now, man, I think the blueprint is out there against KU. Get as many people as you can in the paint. let our guards shoot three pointers until that you can show they can show that we can make them, and we have not made very many. Self after the weekend said, you know, we're not as good as we were 17 or 18 days ago. That's frustrating that we've gone backwards. Do you think they've gone backwards? And I guess this is a nice transition into expectations, but as a team, are you feeling like we, you know, went backwards over this weekend, or just a kind of a bump in the road?
I think it's both, but they certainly didn't play to the level they had been playing, both on both sides of the floor. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that in all three games. But it is a bump in the road because it's a young team. It's not like any of these things aren't fixable. You know, you run into new things like this pressure defense from Villanova, these junk defenses from UTEP. These are things they haven't dealt with before. You know, probably haven't seen these elite type of players run these types of defenses. You know, especially if you're all freshmen, like you're not going to see elite players like that doing that in high school. So, you know, it's something to learn from. It's something to, you know, when you see a Louisville down the road, you know how to do it because you played against Villanova, like because you've practiced playing against that defense. So if you're going to beat Louisville down the road, you've got to know how to beat it. And, you know, we've seen it. We know we're not good at it. Now we know we're not good at it. We can fix it.
Yeah, that's true. We hadn't seen anything like that, certainly leading up to those games. And it's good to kind of get these tests early. This is the time to do it. This is the time to adjust to those. And I'm with you. I'm not terribly concerned yet. I just don't want, you know, the Bahamas to stretch into the next slate of games. Because, Andrew, the schedule is going to start to get pretty tough. We go at Colorado this weekend and, of course, at Florida, where we will be having a Jayhawk Talk watch party.
Blackstreet, no diggity.
Yeah. New Mexico is at Sprint Center, and then we got Georgetown, Toledo, and San Diego State to round out the non-con schedule. I want to ask you, Andrew, what do you think the record will be at the end of the non-con schedule? How many losses are we going to have going into that Oklahoma game starting off the Big 12 slate?
I think that there's one more in there. And if we play like we did this weekend, maybe one or two more. You know, tough games at Colorado, at Florida. New Mexico is a tough team. We play them at the Sprint Center. Georgetown, you know, always, you know, historically good. And then Toledo is probably going to win the MAC, and San Diego State's off to a hot start. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. I bet Bill Self is wishing he had a little more experienced team with this non-conference thing coming up. But, you know, if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. Can't ask for anything else.
Yeah, the good news is, you know, this will be the hardest stretch of games probably of the entire season. Once Big 12 season starts, I mean, we've got certainly some tough games in there, but this is tough, man. These are all good teams. I agree with you. I think there is probably one more loss in there, but I'm perfectly happy with two losses in the non-con schedule. That's what I predicted at the beginning of the season. I still feel good about that, and I don't think anyone will be down on the Hawks if they actually, you know, get out of this gauntlet with just one loss. These are good teams. This is a unproven KU team that's going to continue to get better throughout the season. I don't feel too flustered yet, but I do want to know, are you adjusting your expectations for certain players right now? This is what came up. A lot of people are talking about on Twitter today. Started with Jay Williams' tweet this morning where he said he talked to a NBA scout about Andrew Wiggins, and the NBA scout said something to the effect of, "What does he do well? He doesn't have an elite skill. What does he do well?" Something like that, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I got to know, are you adjusting your expectations now that we've seen Wiggins 7 games? He's averaging like 15-7. What do you think?
I think that's what you said, or one of us said at the beginning of the year. Like, he's probably going to average about 15-7.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we were expecting. My expectations for Andrew Wiggins are still very high. It was just a weird weekend. You know, he had the flu. You know, our buddy Parker, who was in Atlanta, said he saw Wiggins walking through the hallway just coughing up a lung. So, I mean, it's you can't put too much stock into a guy playing 3 days in a row when he's sick like that. But, I mean, we've seen his skill. We've seen what he can do. I'm not adjusting it. If anything, as far as adjusting expectations for certain players, I maybe have more expectations for Joel Embiid.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just real quick on Wiggins. To be honest, I think I undersold his skill set because I don't think he's particularly played well, and he's averaged 15-7. I think he's going to be better than that going forward. And if I had to adjust, I think his numbers will actually go up. But yes, I'm totally with you with Embiid, man. That tournament alone, I don't know what it is, but I literally think when he's on the court, we need to go through him just like we have in the past with talented big men on KU's teams. He's a stud. He's awesome. He's playing a game that no one else is playing out there. And that's, you know, when he starts to just get to realize a little bit more that he's way better than his defender, man, I don't know if anyone's going to stop him. It's very exciting watching him play, and he's getting better on defense too. That's the other thing. I didn't think you and I would talked about that he would be much of a rim protector. You know, there's no replacing like a Jeff Withey, but man, it's almost like Self was like, we need you to block more shots. And he was like, okay. And he just goes out and just starts blocking everything. It's just crazy. And my favorite part is that he goes up with two hands, like he's blocking a volleyball, like at the net, because he's a volleyball player. That's pretty funny.
My favorite part about Joel Embiid is when he does the referee's signal before the referee does it. So if someone travels and he does the traveling call before the referee does, kind of like, yeah, you know, like someone who's just learning the game, who's really into it. You just don't see other guys doing that. That's, you know, every play. It is adorable. It's adorable.
That is adorable. Well, one last thing on expectations. I got to get your point on who's going to be the starting five in 10 games from now. Is Embiid going to maybe start to take some minutes away from Black in the starting lineup, not just in the middle of the game? And what about Frank Mason, who has looked pretty good through the first few games as well, at least being a spark? Any thoughts on either of those two?
I think Embiid will end up starting fairly soon. And it really doesn't even matter. He's playing the minutes of a starter, and Tariq Black is not playing the minutes of a starter. So it doesn't really, who, you know, the old saying, it doesn't matter who starts the game, but who finishes the game.
Right.
That's kind of the point there. But as far as Mason's still making those mistakes that Bill Self hates. And I think that because he's doing that, he's not going to take over Nadir's spot. And I think that if we needed, you know, more offense, we needed some offense from, because we couldn't score, which was kind of true this weekend, then Mason would, you know, keep getting those minutes and maybe start. But, you know, I think Mason's a great scorer, but I don't think he's a good point guard yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. Especially like we talked about, he's penetrating and he has no problem getting past his man. And that's awesome because that breaks down the defense and, you know, creates a lot of room for other guys. But he has a one-track mind when he gets past his man, and that is, I'm going to take this to the hoop and I don't care what happens. And if I get fouled, awesome. If I make it, awesome. But if I get a turnover, whatever. You know, when he gets past his man like that, what he does is get those defenders chasing him too, and that means somebody's open. So he's got to learn to, you know, penetrating is awesome, but penetrating and kicking is sometimes just as good as penetrating and scoring. So, and he'll get there though, man. That's the one thing. I am very surprised with the way he's played as well. He's been a nice surprise through the first few games. I'm with you. I do agree that Tharp will continue to start. But Mason, you know, if he starts to round out his game and starts passing the ball a little bit and getting his teammates involved, there's a chance he could end up taking some minutes away from Tharp, who did not look good, by the way, this weekend. He did not play well. Well, hey, let's move on to talk a little bit about the offense, which was, you know, like we mentioned several times, struggled to score a little bit in Atlantis. And, you know, we've seen him through now several games, and I think we can start to maybe talk a little bit about the offensive philosophy for this team. And I decided to write a little bit about this last night, blog post on jayhawktalk.com. Check it out. About KU offense must find an identity. And the recap of the story basically is that, you know, we've seen Self be extremely successful in his, you know, three out, two in, high low motion offense where the ball is swinging from side to side and creates passing lanes and allows your big guys to seal their man off without an extra defender down in the paint. And he's been really good at that. And this team, you know, is actually pretty much tailor-made for that between Ellis and Embiid being on the court. But I think Bill Self is kind of in a tough spot because he wants to establish the game of Wiggins and Seldon and Frank Mason and getting these guys to penetrate and be, you know, take advantage of their skill sets, which is really a lot of isolation. And so I think there's a little bit of a limbo right now. What team are we going to be? Are we going to be this high-low motion offense where we rely on Perry and Embiid? Are we going to be, you know, run ball screens and ISO sets trying to get our guys in the paint and making plays? And so I think that's kind of where we are right now, with a little bit of in limbo. I'm sure there's a master plan. What say you?
I think it's okay to be in limbo. I just think that we're a huge work in progress, because you've seen different lineups and different things that Bill Self's tried to do. It basically gives you, you know, just a bunch of different options. Like, we've seen these weird three-point shooting, driving kick things where Wayne Seldon and Andrew Wiggins aren't in the game, but you have these three-point shooters in the game. You've seen this two-point guard offense. You've seen this, you know, big guy style. So I think that if we can get everything so we can execute it well, there's just a lot of different options. So, like, this team doesn't play well against interior, we can go big. If this team, you know, is giving up a lot of three-point shots, we can make that move and make that adjustment. So it's good that we don't have to be one thing. But I think that we just, especially when things aren't working, we've got to find kind of our bread and butter.
Yeah.
But so I just don't think it's a bad thing that, you know, we're not, you know, sucked into one type of offense.
No, I agree. But it's good to be multiple. I mean, it's good to show in multiple sets and being able to adjust, like you mentioned. But it just seems to me like, and I think you'll agree, that we're not moving without the ball. There's a lot of, you know, you pass it inside, more likely the ball's going to be shot. You got a guard out the top of the key, more likely he's going to shoot it or drive it. There's not much, you know, in that ball swinging from side to side and looking for passing lanes and guys moving without the ball and, you know, setting screens and motion offense. There's none of that right now. It was just completely evident during those losses, or during the Villanova game and the UTEP game. It was just stagnant. There was no one moving. It was slow. And that's not what we are generally. And I think the good news is with Self's offense, you know, a lot of people have this misconception that it's really only made for high, you know, for big men to be successful. But in that motion offense, it sets up lobs. It sets up, you know, there's so many dimensions to it that, you know, you sets up wide open 3-point looks, creates angles for driving. And that's just, none of that has been happening so far. And I think, you know, as we get into the season farther, and especially over Christmas break, it might be a totally different team once we start installing more and more on the offensive side. The defensive side, I think, is where he started this year, and I don't blame him, because we got a lot of scores, you know, throughout the offseason, focusing on defense, and offense, I think, is going to come. That's my guess, my hope. Do you agree?
I think so, too. You see, you know, Bill Self talks about, we didn't get everything in yet. I mean, he's constantly building and building and building, and really by the end of the season, he'll have what he says, we have everything put in. You know, and you know, the good teams and the experienced teams, you know, they say he can do 50 different things on offense. So right. These teams, there's a reason why these teams get better at the end of the year, just because they have more options. They kind of know what works, know what doesn't work with these types of guys. So, you know, just be patient with this team. It's young. They don't know how to do what Bill Self wants them to do. But once they figure that out, they're going to be good.
I agree. Shall we talk about a little football?
Yes, let's talk about football. So the first thing we want to do, we were putting a bow on this KU football season. It's over. Unless, wait, did I didn't check the paper today, but we didn't make a bowl game, did we?
I don't think so. No, I saw David Ubben came out with his projections for Big 12 teams and their bowls. I did not see KU on the list. I was a little surprised, but
will you double check?
Yeah, hang on.
You should keep talking
while I check just to make sure.
Did we not make the SpaghettiOs Fight Hunger Bowl?
No, we did not.
I want to make that sometime. All right. Yeah,
no,
we
did not make a bowl.
We finished 3-9. If you listen to our KU preview football show at the beginning of the season, you will know that Kevin and I are pretty stupid, pretty dumb, and it's proof that we obviously don't know what we're talking about. Because I think Kevin and I, we predicted, you know, and we were doing it in the most optimistic way possible, but we predicted 6 wins-ish, 5 or 6 wins-ish. If we said 5, I mean, we're only 2 games off. But, you know, long story short, not the season we wanted. Whether it was a season we earned or we should have expected, you know, not the season we wanted. Kevin, did you have fun this year at the football games?
Outside of the football games, certainly. At the tailgates and hanging out with friends and had the Jayhawk Talk Cabana out there and all that stuff. Sure, yeah, you had good food. We had drinks, you know, quite a few drinks. And is that what you're talking about? You're talking about the football thing?
I'm talking about the football thing.
Oh.
The West Virginia game was fun.
Yeah.
A couple of other games were fun in parts, but for the most part, I don't think it was. And let's talk about this game specifically. Yeah.
It's hard to remember that the kick heard around the Big 12, around the world, where we won a game. Remember that a long time ago?
Yeah, at the end of the game, 50-yard kick. That was crazy. So
it was a long let's talk about
K-State. We lost 31-10. We had 6 turnovers.
Ugh.
So you and I were sitting in the Jayhawk Talk luxury box over there in section 10, but it felt like we were sitting in the K-State student section.
Yeah.
Is that what it felt like to you?
Yeah.
I mean, you were tweeting about a guy who had a K-State shirt on and a Mizzou beanie on, and he was the drunkest one of that group, naturally. And I believe that they, and this is all stereotype type of stuff. You know, not everyone from K-State or Mizzou is like this, but the reason why there are stereotypes is because guys like this exist. He was talking about, he was really concerned about safety in them going to the bar later. So he said, just to be safe, let's only drink in the car on the way to the bar, but let's not drink in the car on the way home from the bar.
Makes sense to me.
Which, you know what, this guy, you know, I'm glad he's looking out for his own safety. But just people, there was people like that all around us. So
everywhere.
It didn't really make for an enjoyable game.
Our section was like 7-1 K-State to KU fans. It was terrible. I mean, it was, you and I had tweeted, if Shea and Zanger wants to really feel right now what the state of this program is, he should come sit right next to us, because it was brutal just listening to K-State fans go nuts in our own stadium, talking shit on our team, talking shit on us, just like, and you can't say anything because they're freaking right, because we're terrible. And that's the frustrating part. We can't like defend it. Oh yeah, well, we got Tony Pearson on the bench with a whole bunch of concussions. Oh yeah, we got this incoming wide receiver named Nick Harwell, who's gonna be awesome next year, probably, maybe. Oh, yeah, well, we got a coach that had some Super Bowls one time and is living off Tom Brady. And, yeah, well, crap, we have nothing. Like, that's what's so frustrating. You got nothing. Oh, man. But, you know, there are some good signs from this team. Not particularly this year, but, you know, the good news is there's plenty of guys coming back that were actually pretty good this year. There's a little bit to look forward to next year. You got a feel for the seniors, the guys especially that were there for 5 years through 3 coaching staffs. Man, maybe the worst 5-year stretch in the history of KU football. So thanks, guys. I mean, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you. But thanks for coming out and playing football for us. It was a struggle, but let's talk a little bit about 2014, maybe.
Let's just look back a little bit before we move on. All right,
if we must.
Just to get a little bit of perspective.
Sure.
And I don't know, there's just some interesting things that popped up that I wanted to talk to you about before we move on.
Okay.
So 2007, greatest year Kansas football history.
Mm.
Orange Bowl, Todd Reesing. So Todd Reesing threw 33 touchdown passes that year. However, in the past 3 years, every quarterback who's played for KU combined has only thrown for 30 touchdowns. In the past 3 years, so Todd Reesing has more in one than the past 3 years at KU. So that's 2013, Jake Heaps, Montel Cozart, Michael Cummings threw for 8. 2012, Donye Christ, Michael Cummings had 7. And then 2013, 12, and 11, Jordan Webb, Quinn Meekum had 15. Yeah.
Quinn.
So...
Quinn, yeah. Remember that guy?
Yeah. So it just, we had as many touchdowns in one season as we had in the past three. You know, Tony Pearson, I think, was a disappointment this season. We were expecting him to be Tavon Austin.
He got hurt.
He ended up being, I don't know, in the hospital. You know, he had one touchdown. It's a 77-yard receiving touchdown against Rice, you know, plagued with injuries. At least we had a receiver score a touchdown this year.
That's one thing.
We didn't have a receiver score any touchdown last year. We had four receiving touchdowns this year from a receiver. But the unfortunate, there was only one receiver who made it to double digits in receptions. And that was Justin McKay, who had 11. Wait.
Say that again?
Okay, only one receiver for Kansas. The Jayhawks, you know that
team? Uh-huh.
Had double-digit catches.
Wow.
And the double digits is 11.
There's players that are having double-digit catches in one game, Andrew.
Right. Justin McKay had 5 against K-State to get up to double digits. Trey Parmalee had 9. And it depends on if you count Pearson as a wide receiver. If you count him as a wide receiver, he had double digits. But if you count him as a running back, then only... Justin McKay had double digits in catches, which just goes to show you our offense is pretty terrible. But I want to ask you this question before we move on. Think about the post-Reesing KU football era.
Mm.
Okay, so this is the past 4 years. Is Jordan Webb the best quarterback in that era?
Are we talking stats or just
talking
like,
best quarterback?
You know, the thing about Webb was he could extend plays a little bit, and he had a little wiggle to him.
If your answer is no, who is the best quarterback?
I'm gonna have to go with. Shit, Jordan Webb. I don't know, man. It's tough. The problem is there's no one to catch the ball.
It's the only answer, right?
Well, I guess. I mean, if we had the same stat, you know, the same offensive line and same receivers, you know, maybe Heaps or Christ would have had a lot more success. It's tough to, you know, gauge some of those things, but yeah, man. We haven't had a good quarterback in a long time.
You could say the same for if we had the 2007 line, but we just got to take it year to year. Who is the best quarterback? Just for you, if you're playing at home, your list is Jake Heaps, Montel Cozart, Michael Cummings, Dane Christ, Jordan Webb, Quinn Meekum. Who is the best quarterback for KU out of that group?
Yeah.
I think Jordan Webb is the answer.
Might be. We ran him off so fast. He went to Colorado and sucked. Yeah.
He was a starter. He won the job there.
I know.
Anyway, let's move on. This has been a pretty terrible post-Reesing, post-Mangino era. But are there some promising things, Kevin? Let's talk about 2014. Tell me, give me, and everyone else listening, including the athletic department.
Sure, they do. Yeah.
Give everyone some hope. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I think the biggest news so far, which just came out a few days ago, was that Tim Grunhart was stepping down as O-line coach. And that's not really, you know, I think most people are like, oh, line coach, who cares? But it sounds like, at least the initial report from Matt Tate of the Journal World was that John Reagan would be taking his job as O-line coach. Reagan, of course, was the offensive line coach under Mangino at KU, and he will also be taking the offensive coordinator duties. He is the offensive coordinator currently at Rice, who beat us twice, and he's been pretty good there. He started off as their O-line coach after he left KU and got promoted to offensive coordinator. They've had some good numbers there, and that'll be interesting. Andrew, we bring somebody back who has had success at KU, knows what it takes to be a successful coach at KU, had to grind, you know, to get players and grind to win games at a school that's very tough to win games. He knows what it takes. So it almost seems like, call me crazy, but could this be the next coach at KU when Weiss steps down? You know, he understands what to do at KU. He's seen it before. He's seen success. Is it a possibility?
You said call you crazy. You're crazy, Kevin.
Oh.
No, I can see how it's happening. And, you know, part of the rumor mill has been saying that, you know, this is kind of a Zenger saying you're hiring this guy type of deal. That's not confirmed. I don't know that to be true, but I could see it happening. But what comes next year when Charlie wins two games and gets fired? Do you keep him? Do you just promote him, or how does that work? I think I can definitely see it being sort of an audition to see how the guys take to him. You know, he's had some success. You know, he beat us at Rice for the past 2 years. And what's the old saying? If you can't beat him, hire him.
Hire him. Yeah. I think that's a thing.
Is that a thing?
It is now.
So I am excited to see what happens with him. Although I just don't know if he's going to fit. Because Charlie
seems to be like... Nothing could be worse, Andrew.
Well, maybe something could be worse is that, you know, Charlie... As we've learned, he takes credit when something is good and distances himself when something is bad. So, you know, are we going to know if this guy is the reason, or is it going to be all Charlie?
I think we'll know. I think if he's going to come in and he's going to bring his offense and he's going to install his own offense, we'll know.
Is Charlie going to let him do that?
That's a question. That is a legitimately good question. And if that doesn't happen, and if he's just here to be a offensive line coach and be a figurehead as offensive coordinator, then I think we're going to be in the same exact spot where we are right now next year. We got to have some new blood. We got to have some system changes. And man, I hope that he is the real deal. I think he is. I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to come in and be a silver bullet for this team, but you know, the schedule is not easy next year. We got Duke at Duke, who apparently is now a friggin' playing for a BCS game next week. We got Southeast Missouri State, whatever. And then we got Central Michigan, who's bowl eligible. And then we got our great slate of Big 12 games, man. It's going to be tough. I think the over-under once again is going to be like 3.5 or 4 next year games. And, it will be a big test to see what happens. You know, the good news, Andrew, we return a lot of good players. And I think this is something that was not, I don't know. I think maybe KU defense wasn't getting a ton of credit. Obviously the offense put them in some terrible situations, are pretty much what we saw during the K-State game, 6 turnovers. And they actually held KU to 31 or K-State to 31 points. That's pretty good. We returned to Corey Shepherd and Ben Heaney, Dexter McDonald, Isaiah Johnson, Keon Stowers, all these guys played great this year. Our corners were awesome. Kevin Short will be back. Hopefully Tony Pearson will be back. We return Taylor Cox at running back, who's a stud. And then, you know, we bring in a potentially impact transfer in Nick Harwell, who we've talked about at wide receiver. That's probably the biggest position in need other than offensive lineman, man. And if he could be just half of what he was before, I think that will be huge for KU. The question, though, and this is the biggest question, who's going to be the quarterback? Andrew, do you think it's going to be somebody that we saw this season at quarterback next season?
I don't know. I think that we've seen Charlie's ability to move away from a quarterback who's not working. Cozart showed flashes of being okay, but really didn't ever have success throwing the ball, and that's what a quarterback does. And Heaps just didn't live up to what we thought he was going to be for the second year in a row, you know, with these big transfer quarterbacks. So it could very well be someone else.
Third time's the charm on a transfer quarterback? TJ Millward?
From UCLA.
Maybe.
We'll see. That's going to be the question in the offseason, and all the articles are going to be written about, you know, who's going to be the quarterback next year, and I don't think anyone knows.
I honestly hope that it's somebody different than what we saw this year. And that's not to say that I don't think those guys can get better, but I just want so badly for someone to just come in and be awesome. Like, I want a Bill Whittemore in this team. Could somebody show me a Bill Whittemore? Could someone show me a Todd Reesing? I just want somebody to come in, take the job by the handles, and just run with it and be awesome. Is that too much to ask, man? Is that too much to ask, Andrew?
It's a lot to ask. Oh. I do have some breaking news, though.
Oh, what you got?
Breaking news.
Beep, 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 beep.
You know I have little birds everywhere.
Sure you do.
Right? I have little birds everywhere. Little bird told me that our old friend, Mark Mangino, may be in the running for the University of Wyoming head football coaching job. What do you think about him getting a Division I job?
I hope it happens, and I hope he's awesome.
Just out of spite for people firing him, or
everybody everybody.
I think so too. I think that'd be great.
Wyoming is your old stomping ground, so
I know a little bit about it. So that's where my little bird comes from. So we'll keep an eye on old Marcus Mangino and see where he ends up. You know, he's currently the offensive coordinator for the Youngstown State Penguins.
We should try to get him on the podcast.
You think he'd come?
Yeah, man. We could just, you know, reach out to him at Keep Sawing Wood on Twitter.
Hey, it doesn't hurt to ask, right?
That's right. Maybe we got to get Mangino on. That would be terrific if we could do that, man.
I just wanted to end that segment because I think all good KU football discussions should end with a discussion of Mark Mangino.
There you go.
In what could have been.
What could have been.
Potential future.
Yeah. Well, he was not to blame or totally blameless in the downfall, but probably didn't have as big of a role in it as we were led to believe. You know, if we want to go down this road, we could just talk about John Harbaugh. What could have been?
That's my 30 for 30 idea.
I know. That would be fun. All right. Well, let's out of here.
Let's end on a happy note.
Okay.
And talk about the Johnny's gift card giveaway.
Go ahead.
Kevin from @JayhawkTalk will be tweeting out the details to the December 10th Florida Jayhawk Talk watch party hosted at the Johnny's Power and Light District location. If you retweet that, you will have the possibility of winning this $30 gift card. And chances are you might have a pretty good shot at it.
You got a good chance. How many people are going to retweet that?
You know, a handful.
Like seven or eight, maybe. I don't know.
Shots, just do it. Yeah. And then, obviously, try to win the gift card, but then show up on December 10th, 6 p.m., Johnny's Florida.
There's going to be drink specials. There's going to be food specials, at least 20% off food, which is great if you mention Jayhawk Talk. And we're not treating this necessarily as like you got to come meet the guys in the podcast. It's more of like, let's get a group of KU fans together. Let's do a little tweet up. Get everyone together and watch the game together. Talk about Talk about the game in a big group. It'll be a lot of fun. You'll be there with a ton of KU fans, obviously dedicated ones, because you are listening to this podcast. And we are now approaching 1 hour on the podcast. If you have made it this long, we truly appreciate it. Do us a favor. Go ahead and retweet that little tweet that we're about to do on the December 10th watch party. But also tell a friend about the podcast. That's one thing that we really want to do, is try to get this to as many KU fans as we can. Go on iTunes, if you would. Leave us a rating and a comment. That will also help spread the podcast to those who may not know it exists. And that's a lot of people out there that we assume doesn't know it exists. Because, Andrew, there's a lot of KU folks in this in the Twitter land and in the podcast land. You know, they've been listening to like ESPNs and CBSs and like hearing everyone talk shit on KU. We're not going to do that. We're going to be glowing 6-win football season, national championship predicting podcast people. And that's what we bring to the table.
Before we go.
Yeah.
One thing. Do you mind giving the folks at home a few bars? No diggity?
No, I think I'll pass.
But you're going to pass?
Well, dude, that's what they got to come to the thing for. And then they can
give them a little taste.
No, man, I'm not going to do that. Although Rustin Dodd saw me do that one time. Actually, Brady McCullough did too. They were both very impressed. I think Brady McCullough did some country song, and Rustin Dodd did Michael Jackson. So I don't know if they want me to get that out there, but Rustin Dodd can also do a mean Michael Jackson. You know, maybe we'll get Rustin to come too, and we can make this a double header. I'll do my little Blackstreet, maybe get him to do some Michael Jackson, and you can add, you know, whatever you're gonna add, probably some Kanye or something, right?
That's right. I'll be back from the concert by then. I'll be ready to go. But let's get out of here. We got Colorado this weekend. We got the party Tuesday, Florida next week on Tuesday. Let's get out of here. Jayhawk talk.
All right, right on. We'll talk to you later, Andrew. I'm going to go watch some Monday Night Football where I'm beating you in fantasy football.
Just barely.
All right, Rock Chalk. We'll catch you next time.
Before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the
fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks,
baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.
All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. 9 times get the cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan.
I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chuck Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded.
rock chuck Jayhawk in your face.
This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks.
And if you love it, then I love it.